our best.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Stand By Your Band. I'm Tom Takar, the Wolf of Dog Street, joined, as always, by the Prince of Snarkness himself, Tommy McNamara. How are you, Tommy?
I'm doing very well. I got to go to being vaccinated and everything. Got to go to Chicago this weekend for Mother's Day. It was very exciting.
Hell yeah.
Got to go to a Cubs game. It's very funny going to a Cubs game with like the really limited capacity, because what I noticed is that you really notice the music choices they make in the stadium. And they are like, when it's like the organ, I love anything the organ does, I'm all in. But the songs they choose to play are just brutal. And
yeah. It's like,
you never notice when there's a million people around and you're all talking, but when there's no one there, it's like, oh man, we're really going to listen to this Justin Bieber song for the whole time. And at full volume. So that was, it was very interesting. That was a fun time. And, very quickly, we had one other very funny thing happen where we rented out a movie theater for my family and we watched The Sting, which I'd never seen. An amazing movie. It was great.
I've never seen it.
It's so good. It won Best Picture in, I think, 73. But the very funny thing that happened was, so the whole movie is about this big elaborate ruse to get money. Mm-hmm. And incidentally, during the movie, the fire alarm went off. And the fire alarm went off, fire trucks came, firemen came, huge big production. We had to walk out of the theater. Everyone from like surrounding stores were walking by to see what was going on. It didn't end up being a fire. And then we ended up getting all this money off of our rental.
Hell
yeah. And I don't know if it was our fault or not, but it was like we kind of pulled a ruse during this movie about a big heist. So it was very funny.
That's sick.
For Mother's Day. But it was a great trip. Yeah.
Hell yeah. Speaking of a big elaborate ruse to get money, join the Patreon, people. $3 a month gets you a bonus episode every week. Really quickly, that's crazy. I went to a baseball game this weekend too. First one in, like maybe 2 years. I went to see the Yankees play. And also a weird situation where we have a friend who has a hookup per se, where he knows this like backyard near Yankee Stadium that's like behind a deli where Yankees fans like get drunk before the game or whatever.
Yes.
And so we went to do that. And then the game got rain delayed 3 hours and we didn't know what to do. So we just stayed back there and kept drinking. And then by the time the game started, we were gone. And and same thing where they were playing weird ass music. And then we only watched like 5 innings and then we got rained on, and that part sucked. But you know what? It was great to be back. You had to show your vax card, which was, I think, good. But yeah, so it felt safe. But also the seats were like roped off. Like we did the old move where we bought shitty seats and then we snuck up into good seats. And the security at Yankee Stadium is like non-existent now. It's insane. And so we just like walked into better seats, and then but they were roped off. So it was like very clear that what we were doing, because we kept trying to sit in seats and they were like, oh, that one's got a rope on it.
The ones that are zip tied, right?
Yeah, zip tied. Yeah, yeah. So Bobby, who was with us, just yelled to all the people around us, sorry, we're sneaking. We're sneaking, okay? And nobody gave a shit. And then sure enough, this always happens when I hang with Bobby, where you think that we're having like a conversation that is just ours, but then there were some people in front of us who got up to leave before we did because it started raining on us. And Bobby was like, hey, sorry, we were too loud. And the guys go, no, we were enjoying your conversation. Just move on, buddy. You don't
very
have to
weird.
Say that.
Yeah.
Let's say you were listening. But of course, we're very loud and drunk, so it made sense. But with that out of the way, we have a very great show today. I'm very excited for this one. And I'm super excited to bring in our guest today, David Reese. How are you?
Hi, fellas. Sorry. That was weird. Hi guys. How are both of you fellows doing today?
Doing well.
Good. Doing
I'm so excited. It was very funny because we're talking about Hall & Oates today. And it's so funny that this is the topic we're doing this week, because last week I was at a friend's rooftop and I was DJing and he was like, well, I have to play this one song. I was like, okay, cool. And the song he played was the live from Daryl's house with Chromeo, where they play I Can't Go For That. And I'd never seen it. Oh. And it was so good. And I was like, I never really gave Hall & Oates too much of a shot. And I loved it. And the next thing you know, we're talking about him on the podcast. So I'm very excited. I'm
happy to be a part of your education about Daryl yes. Hall and John Oates.
It's kind of funny because so the premise of this show, for people who might not have listened before and are jumping in to hear about Hall & Oates, we usually do bands that are fully like made fun of, like shit on, or we do bands that are really underrated. We've been doing lately like Jawbreaker and stuff. And I was always a little hesitant on Hall & Oates because I always thought of them as just a cool band. I always loved Hall & Oates growing up. I had their greatest hits and stuff. But then watching I think we both watched their Behind the Music today. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize that they had this phase of like, no, they were really uncool. And even they kind of knew it. And they were looked down on by rock people because they were R&B, and it's interesting. I had no idea. So I'm glad you brought this band up because I also have wanted to talk about them for a long time.
Oh, that's good. All right. I was worried I was going to get in trouble.
No, no,
it's not like, it's not like Nickelback. They're not a punchline exactly, but my experience with Hall & Oates and why I thought maybe it would work is I came to know that I was growing up in the 80s. So I was introduced to Hall & Oates kind of like at the height of their pop era. Mm-hmm. And then when I went back as an older person and found those early records from the early 70s, it was just shocking how good they were.
Yeah.
And how non-synthy they were, you know?
Yes.
So for me, it was kind of like I am guilty of doing that thing of being the high schooler who's all of a sudden is too cool for Hall & Oates because they just play pop music and I'm into real music. And then years later being like, oh, wait a minute, Hall & Oates were incredible.
Yeah.
Like I think they're one of my top 10 bands.
Really?
Just on the strength of like just a handful of songs that I just think are so amazing.
I mean, they had so much success, and it's one of those where it's like a classic, you know, younger people getting famous and then losing all their money sort of shit where I think it was Oates was saying that he like and that Behind the Music, he like lost everything, but he also was like living so large. He had an airplane and shit and he just didn't.
I've never seen the Behind the Music. I should watch that.
I'm sure we'll touch on it throughout the episode, but
I actually don't know that much about them. Like,
can I tell you? Oh,
only
no,
this
go ahead,
morning but... did I realize they don't like being referred to as Hall & Oates.
Same, just, yes.
Yeah, I didn't even know that. I missed that part.
The name of our group is Daryl Hall and John Oates, and my whole life I've been disrespecting them. So yeah. Any trivia or stories you can tell me, I'll be totally psyched to hear.
The craziest story is like right in the beginning, and I can't believe it wasn't in it. They touched upon this on the Behind the Music, but they didn't say the most interesting part, which is, so they met at this show that was, I think Adelphi, concert venue or whatever in Philadelphia. They're both Philadelphia guys, mm-hmm. and they were in different bands. They were in different projects. And, the reason they met is a gunfight broke out between two gangs at the show, and they sprinted to the elevator. They happened to be in the same elevator, and they just hit it off in this elevator, escaping gun violence. And that wasn't in the Behind the Music. I don't understand how they didn't cover it. They said like they met at this show, but they didn't say, oh, by the way, the show ended because a gunfight broke out.
Wow.
It's insane. But yeah, you wouldn't think of like, yeah, Hall & Oates, they meet because of this weird gang thing. That I mean, neither of them were in either of the gangs, but it's like, it's just a crazy fun fact. And then they didn't even get together right then. They like they became friends, and then they started collaborating a little bit. And then one of them went to Europe and then came back, and they were like, let's actually do this. And they lived together and like immediately started making great music. And within, you know, a couple of years were signed, I believe, to Atlantic. And they were making folky stuff with Atlantic, which is the stuff that a lot of stuff on the playlist is from, I think, the Atlantic stuff, which was in
Luncheonette, one of my favorite records.
And yeah.
And that record does have moments of surprising folkiness if you only know Daryl Hall and John Oates from their synth pop. And stuff.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure that's the album that they were like, Atlantic wasn't happy with it. And they ended up leaving and going to, I can't remember.
RCA, I think.
RCA, that was
yeah. RCA. Well, then their manager, very interestingly, was Tommy Mottola, which I did not know. They're like when they were just starting out, which is just crazy because I just always think of Tommy Mottola through the Mariah Carey.
And I believe at the time he was nobody. I think in the behind the music, they're like, yeah, just this kid who's like, yeah, I want to manage you, or maybe that was a different guy. But anyway, yeah, Tommy Mottola ends up managing them and then almost immediately hands them a $1 million check because they're number one on the radio. Like they're just killing it so quickly. But it's interesting that they were like, yeah, that album, I don't know if it's the first or the second one, but the Lunch and Owen, it was like not a huge hit. And then they went back and released some songs from it again and they were hits. It's pretty crazy.
It took a while for She's Gone to become a radio staple.
Yeah. Which is crazy. Cause it's, you listen to it, you're like, how is this not immediately huge? It's insane.
There's some songs where I think it's fun. Have you ever read the article? I guess it's on Wikipedia about when they recorded Rihanna's song Umbrella. And the story of being in the studio and the first time she was doing a vocal pass on like the Ella, Ella, you know, that repeated thing. And the producers looked at each other and they're like, oh my God, this song is going to be a worldwide blockbuster smash hit. They were so excited.
Yeah.
And I wonder if, just imagine like listening to the playback of She's Gone, you would be thinking, oh my God, we wrote a hit song. This is so exciting. Like this song is so massive. This is going to be so exciting. So they were probably a little bummed out when at first it didn't take, but they earned their reward in the end.
Definitely. And wise of them to, it does seem like Daryl Hall specifically has an ear for what's going to be big. And hearing him talk about writing Sarah Smile, I loved, because I loved that song growing up. And I really liked finding out that song was about a real person, because I knew nothing about Daryl Hall or John Oates' real lives. I just knew the music and I always loved it. I only knew the hits. It was a thing where I never did any kind of deep cut. I would just listen to the best of Hall and Oates. And I, as a kid, immediately loved all of it. And it was before I would like listen to a full album of something. And I didn't know that he had this long-term relationship with this girl, Sarah. And he, within like a couple months of knowing her, writes her this song that's beautiful, and then it's about a real person. Because I hate when you hear a love song and you're like, the guy's just like, I just thought I needed to write a love song, so I just put this shit on a track. Like we talk about the
my manager told me we needed a ballad, so I made up a girl named Jolene and the rest is history or whatever.
Yeah, just a syllable based relationship. Yep, right, yeah.
That's how the song we talked about it last week, but the song Hannah Hunt from Vampire Weekend, which I love, or maybe we talked about that on the Patreon, but I love that song so much. And then I looked it up and Ezra Koenig is just like, yeah, it's just a song, I don't know, who gives a shit. He like didn't have any kind of feeling about it or whatever, and I was so pissed. But he's like, there is no Hannah, I just thought it was a good name. But no, I loved that, and that song's great. But we should get into listening to some music here. You gave us a great playlist here. And I think we should just go in the order you sent them, because
I think I sent it in chronological order.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
They are. So let's hear. I had never heard this song before, but Las Vegas Turnaround, I really enjoyed. So I'm going to throw it on.
Off on a turnaround, flying gambling fools to the Holy Land, Las Vegas. Sometimes she's here and sometimes she can't be found. Turn around. Sarah's off on a turnaround, flying gambling fools to the Holy Land, Las Vegas. Sometimes she's here and sometimes she can't be found. Turn around. Sarah's off, half hiding far above the clouds. How she flies, I know. I gotta find her a place she can push her toes around. She needs a place where she can lounge and work out. Sarah, turn around. Turn around.
That is Sarah. Sorry, Las Vegas turnaround. I wanted to say Sarah turnaround, but that's not quite the name. Yeah, I enjoyed that. I had never heard that before, and it's very pretty.
It's really pretty. It's really smooth, and the vocal harmonies are really interesting. I mean, obviously, they're a duo. They're known for blue-eyed Philly soul and their mm-hmm. vocal harmonies, but I think the vocal harmonies in that song are really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I loved it. I'd never heard that one either. So did you just pick up this Abandoned Lunch Night? Because I'd never listened to this album at all. And all three songs you sent from it, I thought were so good. Did you just like pick up the vinyl of this kind of on a whim, or how did that happen?
That's a good question. I was trying to remember when I was thinking about doing this episode. I think what happened was, and I think this is one of the reasons that Hall & Oates is kind of like so central to my music understanding. When I was in middle school, my friends and I, we grew up during like the height of the new wave, like synth pop music, you know, like in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And then my friends and I got into punk rock and experimental music and kind of I thought I was kind of like too cool for radio music. And then at some point, a couple things happened that made me be a little more open-minded about music. One was, I think we were driving. My friend and I were driving, and we heard She's Gone on the radio. And we're like, it just kind of like broke through our hipster defenses. And we were just like, holy shit, this song is so incredible. And so I think what happened then was, so I grew up in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, excuse me, which is where UNC is. And mm-hmm. UNC has always had a great student radio station called WXYC. And I think I called up WXYC and just asked them to play She's Gone by Hall & Oates. And I didn't know if they would, because that was a college radio station. Like, why would they play a pop song, which at that point wasn't old enough to be ironically interesting? You know what I mean? And the DJ played it, and he was like, that's She's Gone by Hall & Oates. It's off Abandoned Luncheonette, which is just one of those, if you could only take 100 records to a desert island, that's got to be your record. So I filed that away as like, oh, Abandoned Luncheonette, huh, okay. That's interesting, because I didn't know what album it was on.
Yeah.
It was pre-internet. I didn't know how to find out what album She's Gone was on. Years later, graduated college, I was living in Boston. And I think I was just at a local Amvets thrift store. And I found a beat-up old copy of Abandoned Luncheonette. And I was like, I'm going to see if that college radio DJ from 6 years ago or whenever it was, let me check out this record.
Yeah.
Took it home, put it on. It was just like, oh my God, the first side, especially of this record, is just exquisite. It's just like great songwriting, great harmonies, great instrumentation, great musicianship.
Let's, should we listen to the next song here? Let's, mm-hmm. Let's hear the next song on this playlist here. We have, I'm Just a Kid. Which I was like, still knowing it was Hall & Oates, I was still expecting that song. That's like
a Simple Plan.
Yeah. I'm just a kid. All right, here it is.
When you make decisions for your company, you always look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing and shipping to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your process to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, books, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart if you sell online, schedule package pickups through the dashboard, and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are, even on the go. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other business decision makers with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage, and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Little girl, what's your name? Now don't you go looking at me like that, you might see I'm ashamed. What's your name? Just talk with me. Won't you talk to me?
you survive? Learn to try. I know you can't describe the dreams you wanna be to stay or get away. I'm not playing around, can't you tell the way I'm squeezing your hand? I'm just a kid, don't make me feel like a man. Your lips make me say it that way. And now there's no use you resisting. This the crater thief insisting. You better let me have it my way. From around.
That falsetto is so wild that they hit on that. It's amazing. Yeah.
Oh, you got to get to the drums. Can you fast forward and play when the drums kick in? So badass. So awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I realized something really important. I realized something really important about this album last night, which is, one of the things I forgot to mention about She's Gone is that was one of the first songs where I actually really noticed the drumming. Mm-hmm. And I had played drums in punk rock bands in high school, but it's not like, I was not like a connoisseur of like the subtleties that instrument affords. But on the chorus of She's Gone, On the offbeat, it has those open hi-hats. It's really distinctive. Mm-hmm. When we listen to it, you'll hear it. She's gone. Oh, what? It has that open mm-hmm. hi-hat on the, I guess, on the and of the beat. I always remembered that. So I was re-listening to some of these songs last night, including this one. And I was like, God, the drumming is so good on this record. I wonder who the drummer was. So mm-hmm. I looked it up on Wikipedia. It was Bernard Purdy. And then all of a sudden, everything made sense. It was like, oh, that's why this record is so awesome, because they have one of the greatest American drummers who's ever lived to play on it. You know, Bernard Purdy is this legendary session drummer who's played on like 1,000 records. He played on Steely Dan's big hits. And he invented a very distinctive beat called the Purdy Shuffle, which you hear mm-hmm. all the time, which is like it's like a triplet over a backbeat. It's like when you hear it, you'll know it. It's like super distinctive. Anyway, mm-hmm. he's this really amazing drummer. And then when I looked at the credits and was like, oh, every song I love on this record, Abandoned Luncheonette, it was Bernard Purdy playing on it.
Oh, wow.
So that's why the drum fills are incredible and just why mm-hmm. it's so tasteful and so exciting. Anyway, I got super stoked when I saw that. It was like a small world moment.
Yeah. That's awesome. Let's go ahead and hear She's Gone so we can hear what we just talked about. Here is Here She's Gone. I gotta skip forward a little bit, but I love the beginning so much.
It's a long intro.
Yeah.
Everybody's high on consolation. Everybody's trying to tell me what is right for me. Daddy tried to bomb me with a sermon, but it's plain to see that they can't comfort me. Sorry, Charlie, for the imposition. I think I gotta
got the strength to carry on. Yeah, I need a drink and a quick decision. Now it's up to me. Ooh, what will they hear? She's gone. She's gone.
What a song.
Yeah, I get goosebumps. It's an incredible song.
It's a masterpiece.
Yeah, it's a total masterpiece. There's so many little production. There's so many little musical elements that are kind of like when he talks about the carbon and monoxide, and you have that weird, like a car, you know, like the Doppler effect. There's so many cool little moments like that throughout the song. And then when it... you know, when it builds and there's the key change at the climax of the song, it's just like, it's incredible. And yeah, and you have like one of the greatest drummers of all time playing on it. It's just like,
so cool.
It's terrific. Yeah.
So cool. I love this too, that like they could have gone either way. You could be like, man, they're so lame, because they're like, it's Hall and Oates wrote this while they were consoling each other over heartbreaks. Daryl had just divorced from his wife, Brina Lublin, and a New Year's Eve date had stood up, John, which is funny. Those are not the same. You're like,
right.
My wife left you. Oh, lady just stood me up. All right. Well, I guess
I didn't even know that though, but I mean, like, that's great. Like it is. Yeah. I mean, you can't say it's not a heartfelt song.
Absolutely. I love that they were both just like, let's pour it out. And like, they were both consoling each other, and they're like, let's write about consolation. And it's great.
I mean, to get back to my wondering about what it was like to hear it in the studio when they were done, maybe it was like kind of emotional for them. You know, if it really came out as something really real for both of them, getting stood up by a New Year's date, the greatest tragedy that could be a whole rock star. But yeah.
That is I love it though. It's like their emotions are clearly on their sleeves at all times, and I love it.
And it's working in that, you know, they're very indebted to R&B and to black music. And one thing that song really does that a lot of soul music does really well is it combines really heartbreaking, sad lyrics with just the music is euphoric. I mean, it's, you know, the weird thing about that song, and one thing that I think makes it so indelible, is when he sings She's Gone, he sounds triumphant, you know, it's like a victory. And it's almost like it's so cool, because on the one hand, it sounds like he's like, you know what? Fuck it. She's gone. I'm just going to own it. Universe. Mm-hmm. Hit me with your best shot. Let's see what you got, because she's gone. You know, it's like this, it's this moment of like real openness. And it always reminds me of what's probably my favorite song ever, which is I Want You Back by the Jackson 5, which is musically like one of the most joyful things ever. But you know, it's guy fucked up and got dumped, and he'll do anything to get her back. You know, that combination, the dissonance between the music and the lyrics, I think works really, really well in this instance, especially in the chorus. I think that final She's Gone is just like overwhelming. It's so awesome.
Absolutely. It's so good. So good. All right. We have a regular segment we got to get to before we hear more music. Cause I don't want to get too deep into this, because I'm curious what he's going to say. So we have a regular segment where we go to our resident snob of the show, Jared Thompson, the owner of the Comedy Attic in beautiful Bloomington, Indiana. He likes to give his thoughts on the music we're listening to via voicemail. And I'm curious what his thoughts are this week. So let's hear from Jared. Here are Jared's thoughts on Hall & Oates. Daryl Hall and John Oates. Sorry. Apologies to them.
What's up, y'all? This week's It Went to Jared. The boys are going to have a guest on. I'm not sure if it's defending or discussing Hall & Oates because they are kind of hated. But also, I think the average person at least can, you know, is indifferent to it. But I personally love the band, and I get it that, like, it's not the same thing as, you know, they're definitely not an elite band. Like, I don't think that anybody is arguing that they're, you know, Led Zeppelin or the Beatles or whatever. But if you just, you know, you're just looking to have fun listening to music that isn't, you know, irritating sounding, I think that Hall & Oates are a great option for you. And they have probably 10 or 12 or so pretty top level songs from the 80s. And I just personally feel like that they are part of the, like, a major part of the fabric of the music of the 80s. And, you know, they definitely are cheesy, I suppose, but it's fun. And that's really the, you know, the number one thing for me. What's really interesting is that Dana and I went to go see them. Maybe it was like the state fair in Louisiana. It was long enough ago that, like, bands weren't really doing these, like, they play the greatest hits album or they play this specific album. It was like they were kind of touring when it wasn't really a thing that, like, REO Speedwagon would play a certain album or whatever. So what was really interesting was that they played, like, new songs. They played new Hall & Oates songs. They played new Daryl Hall songs. They played one or two new John Oates solo songs. And that was really weird. But once they got into, you know, Maneater and One on One and all the great songs of the 80s, it was a lot of fun. And, but yeah, I mean, and Daryl Hall has a pretty great, Fripp produced album in the 80s, or, you know, could even have been late 70s, I'm not sure, but it's pretty good too. But once, you know, when they're in their wheelhouse of just making fun songs in the 80s, they're pretty great. All right, thanks, guys, appreciate it.
All right, thank you, Jared. That was Jared Thompson. Those were his thoughts.
It sounds like he doesn't know about these 70s albums. Yeah. school him on Abandoned Luncheonette and also on Daryl Hall, John Oates.
I think he'll be interested to hear about this. I just saw this. I do want to point out, because he said the thing about the current, or when he saw them, they played new stuff. And I, in the Behind the Music, they talked about that, where it's like they're trying to make new music, or they were trying to, and playing it at live shows. And I was wondering how that would be, because I don't think I would enjoy that so much.
But yeah, I think if, you know, I never saw Prince live, and I've always regretted that. And so a couple years ago, I was like, I got to see Hall & Oates, man. I just got to do it, you know? And if I did that, and I'd probably be a big stadium or something, mm-hmm. and then they come out and start singing some weird new stuff, I'd probably be a little impatient. I mean, I should trust their songwriting skills. I've been defending them as songwriters, but I would really, I would want that, like your friend mentioned, this was before people just went around touring live versions of legendary albums. If they just did the Abandoned Luncheonette tour and said, we're just going to play Abandoned Luncheonette straight through, I would be very, very excited to go see that.
That would be an amazing show. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Absolutely. But I do think it's cool that they would try to make new music. Like
I think, like, that is really cool. It's not cynical. You can't say they're being cynical about it if they're forcing their audience to sit through a bunch of new music they've never heard before.
Yeah,
and you know, it's not totally a cash grab, right?
Yeah, and they even said, like, we don't want to do this shit for money. We want to do it for, we like doing music. And nothing proves that more than, we're just gonna fucking put some new, we're gonna give you something brand new, you're gonna sit through it. And it's always sad watching, especially Behind the Music, where they feel like they have to talk about, like, where the direction they're heading in now, and you're like, I don't care, man. Like, they kept talking about, because I mean, this was interesting, the internet was a huge thing for Hall & Oates, because that was such a revitalization of their music to a new fan base, and things like the Gym Class Heroes, and you talked about it earlier, but Chromeo using their stuff gave people like we got to check this out. I like the song, and I didn't even know it. And Yeah, it was interesting. But one kind of sad thing is they're like, one like triumphant thing where they're trying to be like, look, see, things are good for them now. They're like, their YouTube video got 1.5 million views. Right. You're like, I don't care about that, man. That's like, I get why that's was cool in 2003 or whatever that thing came out, but it's just funny to hear them talking about it like that. We do have more songs to get to. Let's hear the next one on your list here, which is Camellia.
Into the spotlight, one more time, just in time to play. One man at an empty table was drinking down the pain. You could say, what's his last name? And I heard him call, oh, Camellia, won't you take me away?
That's a great harmony right there.
No, he wouldn't go. So I asked him why I called her name. Since she was a magic one night, a summon for his pain. And all she knew was a pretty name. Oh, Camellia, won't you take me away?
There's some fun guitar riffs in that one too. That, yeah,
it's a great arrangement.
Yeah,
and this is off of the album where it was like a controversial cover because they're very airbrushed and like made. They're it looks like they're wearing very heavy makeup, and in the Behind the Music, Oates goes, I think it's Oates goes, that looks like the woman that I've always wanted to date. And it's him just like highly airbrushed.
It feels like somebody saw David Bowie around mm-hmm. that time and was yes. like, we should yep. try the androgynous outer space alien thing.
Totally. Yeah.
For Bowie.
Very Bowie, yep. yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is another one of the records that I just picked up at a thrift store and it just blew me away. And the back cover of the record, or maybe it's the sleeve. Maybe it's their actual record sleeve. They're like, I think they're like listening to records on a spaceship or something. It's very spacey. This record mm-hmm. is very self. The design of the record is very self-consciously about outer space.
Yeah. So very much, it sounds like the Bowie thing is relevant.
Ziggy Stardust stuff.
All right. Let's hear the next one. Here is on the same album. This is Gino in parentheses, the manager.
You've got to sell your imagination. Second generation. And away from the family ground. But you got your own way. Sign on the line, sign on the line, on the line. You're a patent leather lover. With your Gucci, Gucci, pointed shoes.
That's fun. Kind of reminds me of the Styx, Mr. Roboto a little bit.
Yeah, it's very angular. And one thing I like about that song is that in the verses, there's the rhythm is, it's really tight, but it's also kind of complicated. It feels like people are playing musical phrases of different lengths, or the drumming is emphasizing offbeats or something. It just has a real herky jerky quality that I think sounds really futuristic.
Yeah. Very fun. All right. We got a couple more songs here from your list and then one more thing. So, and we have another segment to get to. So I'm going to cruise through these next ones. The next one is, we all know this one. We love it. You Make My Dreams Come True.
Classic.
So good.
It's very funny reading the Wikipedia for this song, because in the first paragraph it says, you know, it's a song by American duo Hall & Oates, taken from their 9th studio album Voices. The song reached number 5 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart in 1981. It is the theme song for the Toronto Maple Leafs. I was like, that is a weird.
Nice.
I was very surprised by that.
But with all the facts about this song, I'm surprised that was so high.
Opening paragraph.
There. Yeah. Because there's a lot of information.
Maple Leafs
song.
Fan is editing Daryl Holmes on the Wikipedia page. Trying to send as many hockey references as possible.
What do you guys, what is first thing that comes to mind when you hear this song? Because this one, there's an inseparable thing that I think of when I hear this song.
For me, the thing is, it's not an association, but it's kind of like Gino, the manager. The opening rhythm is really off kilter, but works. And I don't know enough about music to know what's funky about it. But I find it really engaging.
So yeah, I was looking into that, and so John Oates said that he and a guitar player friend, he was playing like a Delta blues type song, and then the other guy started playing a Texas swing, and they just kind of put them over each other, and it ended up into that being that riff.
Wow,
yeah,
that's cool.
A combo.
But you guys
know
what I mean, right? It is kind of just like this weird.
Yeah,
it's like one of those mismatches, but it works.
It works really well.
It's really distinctive. It's really
so bouncy and
yeah,
joyous. Yeah.
It's such a fun song. I cannot listen to that song without thinking of the montage in The Wedding Singer that this song is on with the wedding dresses. It's a great scene. Very fun. Probably there's some moments that might not hold up, but it's just a very fun scene. And I can't not hear the song. I can't hear the song and not think about that. But I love it.
Montage song.
Great man. I think it's in 500 Days of Summer too.
Yeah,
and then
it's in a lot of movies.
Kermit the Frog sang the song on The Masked Singer.
Bullshit Masked Singer appearance. It's like you are masked. Like that's insane. That's so funny. It was in Ready Player One, I think. It's in a bunch of stuff, but my favorite thing it's been in is, it's in Step Brothers also. And I love it so much. And I just want to point out, John Oates is contributing. A lot of people, when you Google stuff about Hall & Oates, people are like, what does John Oates even do? And it's like, because it seems like Hall does a lot of the stuff, but they clearly need each other.
Yeah, totally.
The next song on here is just a classic. If you Google most successful Hall & Oates song, this is, I believe, what comes up, and it is the song Man Eater. Just classic. So good. I just read some because they talk about being really embarrassed by their music videos because they were, when MTV started, they were a major staple of it.
Totally. And they were big on MTV. Yep.
And they like supposedly like that's part of what people make fun of them about is their kind of cringy music videos. And the on their song facts it says the video for this song was a disjointed affair, which was typical of 1982 in the early days of MTV. Hall & Oates took little interest in their videos, so directors hired by their record company could get away with just about anything. Maneater is mostly tight shots of the band performing in what looks like an after-hours champagne room with occasional shots of a girl juxtaposed with a panther. Daryl Hall said in the book I Want My MTV, somebody decided the Maneater video wouldn't be complete unless we had an actual panther, a man-eating animal, in the video. It appeared for a second and a half in the video and probably cost $10,000. Hall adds that for most of the shoot, the panther was leashed to the floor, but at one point it got loose and started roaming the rafters.
Wow.
This is when he left.
That's amazing.
Just great. Panther roaming the
I would recommend two videos. One is their video for Method of Modern Love, mm-hmm. which is incredibly 80s, and then also for Jingle Bell Rock, where they are very deliberately acting like incredible goofballs. Like they're really dorky, you know?
Yeah.
I think one of the reasons I find them so appealing is like fundamentally they kind of just seem like a couple of dorks, you know? Yeah. There's a big tall dork and then there's a shorter dork. But they just like write incredible music. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we watched that Method of Modern Love video beforehand today, and it's very funny. It's like the most 80s thing you've ever seen. They have the trash can drum set, which is a very fun visual.
Classic New York's big city skyline.
With the fog machine.
It's the one where they're like floating through the clouds and shit, right?
It's like cardboard skyscrapers.
I have it pulled up here. I'll play a little bit of it just so we can hear the song we're talking about too, and I can see some of it here.
It's so funny that before Method Man, someone else spelled out the word method in a song.
Yeah, about that, man. That's where he got it from.
Yeah.
They really do sound like the 1980s have swallowed them.
Yeah. I just want to point out, he says the moonlight and he points at the moon. There's just a giant moon. It's just very on the nose. There's the trash can drums. This is very bad. His dancing is also absurd in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very cheesy. But yeah, that's worth checking out, that video. It's very, very goofy. But that is the playlist. We have another segment to get to before we get to the final parts where we rate the playlist and all that good stuff. But we got a lot of comments on this one. So this is the segment where we go to the Peanut Gallery, the listener of the show, and see what their thoughts are on Hall & Oates. And we, like I said, we got a lot. As always, we go to the Patreon first. If you're on the Patreon, you get to have your thoughts guaranteed to be read. And let me see what all we got here. We got quite a few right off the bat. Jess Tabor comments, Hall & Oates are a prime example of pure pop bliss. Their music beyond slaps, it fucks. Okay. Thanks, Jess. April M says Out of Touch is a banger straight out of the gate with one of my favorite intros in all of music. Truly. Kyle Bradley says one of the few things Philly can be proud of. Disagree with that, Kyle.
Wow. All right.
He says Rich Girl is a first ballot Hall of Famer and worth going through the deep cuts. Any favorite Hall & Oates moment is when they figure out what he's trying to say here, but it says Amy favorite Hall of and Oates moment is when they tried to play a new song at an Eagles halftime and got booed by garbage Philly fans, causing Hall & Oates to ripcord the new track and start playing Maneater.
People wanted Maneater.
That's incredible. In the Philly fans' defense, fuck that. You're playing a new song in the middle of a football game.
We've already established they're not resting on their laurels. They want to keep challenging their listeners with new music.
It's true.
Nathan St. Amand says, one of the all-time hits bands. They're the perfect example of how good pop songwriting can be at its best. Also, I sincerely hope the boys find a Are You More of a Hall or an Oates quiz online somewhere. You know what's funny is I did find a quiz, but I think we're going to skip it today because it was just another song are you? And it was also kind of visual. And there's some other stuff we want to get to. So that's the Patreon comments. Tommy, did we get any on Twitter?
We did. Yeah, we got a friend of the show, past guest JP McDade, said there was a photo on the wall of my hometown hibachi place labeled Hall & Oates, but it was just a picture of Daryl Hall with the staff. I like to think they made Oates take the picture. This is a very funny comment. And then this was something I didn't know about. I don't know if you guys did, but Admiral Snack Bar gave a phone number and said Hall & Oates emergency hotline. And I think we should call it and see what happens because I had not heard of this before. He tweeted that. Tom, I Zoom chatted you.
I have done this before. My sister sent this to me maybe 10 years ago.
Oh,
and
really?
I remember being blown away that it existed. And it's pretty exciting stuff. So I will give it a call. Let's do the Hall & Oates hotline experience live.
Which is called, I did look it up after I found out, it is called Call & Oates. We have to note
pretty
the pun.
Yeah. All right, here we go.
Welcome to Call & Oates, your emergency Hall & Oates helpline. To hear one-on-one, please press 1. To hear Rich Girl, please press 2. To hear Maneater, please press 3. To hear Privatize, please press 4.
I press 2.
That is really amazing.
I can't believe they let I thought they were kind of litigious. I can't believe they let that stand.
Right? Did they play the whole song too? I wonder.
Oh shit. I think they do play the whole song. I remember doing this and playing all of them and being like, yeah, Hall & Oates rules. Like, it had been a while since I'd heard it, but I'm pretty sure my sister sent me that forever ago, and it's pretty sick that exists. So, yeah, call that number, and if you don't have Spotify, you can just listen to Hall & Oates music on the fly.
And then the last one was Adam, who said, saw them perform in Philly 13 years ago, no bueno. However, I loved the Live at Daryl's House show.
Yeah,
that was, so he might have been at that Eagles halftime, maybe.
Yeah, it is.
Watching
Live
at Daryl's House episode or two was when I realized, oh, this guy I think smokes a ton of pot. I bet he's really good company.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I just remembered I read this thing that I think it was that they were the only white band to be number one on the R&B charts. And I feel like that can't be right, but I don't know who else it would be, but good for them.
Yeah.
I just remember that because I was thinking about the Philly comment because Philly has a lot of good bands. Like there's so many good bands out of Philly. So if you are not familiar with like Hop Along or as we've talked about to death on the show, the band Mannequin Pussy, that's all I listen to now. Both Philadelphia bands. So on Facebook, we got a ton of comments. I won't be able to get to all of them. If you want your thoughts guaranteed to be read, get on that Patreon. It's only $3 a day a month. So get over there. Brandon Ream says, great music to clean or party to. True. Mike Cronin says, one of the first Funny or Die videos is Will Ferrell getting a chip in his brain that constantly plays Private Eyes and slowly drives him insane. yeah, there's the Call & Oates thing. Shane Smith says they don't like to be called Hall & Oates. They like Daryl Hall and John Oates. Thank you, Shane. I should have read that before the show started, but I was already told also.
They're going to be so furious after listening to this episode.
Yeah, and they're on the Patreon too, so they'll hear it first.
Yeah, that's right. We should start doing it. We don't even do that. That's not a bad idea. Let's see. Matt Fishman says, when my parents' 1995 Toyota Camry was stolen, I cried because Best of Hall & Oates was in there. I love that. Kevin Bannon says, when I was in college, two of my friends decided to go to a Halloween party as Hall & Oates in 1 year. It was a funny idea until the guy going as Hall had to bail at the last minute, so my friend Brian had to go by himself as Oates. All night long, people kept asking him who he was. I'm Oates, he would reply solemnly. I'll just say this. Three different people wrote, I can't go for that. So just know you all did it. Let's see. There's another one about Colin Oates. David Vagnetti said, my aunt had sex with Oates.
Oh.
And then he did not give us any other details. Somebody questioned it and he said, yep. And then he said, Out of Touch is a very underrated song.
Maybe it's about his aunt.
Andrew Rudick says Jimmy Pardo has the best Hall & Oates bit of all time. On Sprezzatura, I concur, but I would also say there's not that many bits about it. So the pool is small, but Jimmy Pardo does have the best. Let's see here. So many here. Casey James Salingo says, too many thoughts to write, so all I'll say is they fucking rule. True. Very true. I'll read, I think, maybe one more here, because like I said, there's so many here. Justin Case McCall says, my favorite band to make me feel like I'm in a Walmart at 2 a.m. and Maneater is playing quietly while I look at different cereals for 45 minutes. Brother, I get that. I've been there. That was the thing to do in Indiana, just hang out at a damn Walmart at 2 in the morning. all right. Last one. These people keep saying they missed it. They're fine. Maggie May said, oh, damn, I missed this. I had a lot of thoughts. Casey Raven says, Sarah Smiles, one of my faves. And Matt Alonzo Morning says, I missed this, but I was gifted some Hall & Oates tickets a few years ago, and that concert was mid-tempo as fuck.
All right. Yeah. I mean, they're in their 70s now. They're older.
Yeah, what do you want from these people? All right, that is the end of that segment, and we are down to our final thing here, which is we rate the playlist. But before we do that, you, David, get to give your final thoughts on Hall & Oates. You have the floor.
My final thoughts on Daryl Hall and John Oates. I would encourage everyone to check out their album Abandoned Luncheonette. I really do think it's a really surprising and interesting album. And I would also recommend, if there's only one Hall & Oates video to watch, don't watch a video from the 80s. It's a 70s video of them performing the song Camellia live. I think I sent it to you guys, maybe.
Yes.
And the vibe is just unreal. And it's it's very evocative. And it's just a jubilant song. But yeah, if people are going to take away one thing from this, it's just check out the record Abandoned Luncheonette, and I hope you like it. Yeah.
Hell yeah. Oh, yeah. So one thing I was thinking, so we usually do the playlist out of six songs. So I was thinking maybe to narrow it down, because we have seven. Cut Maneater. Okay, great. Yeah, yeah. And we'll cut Method of Modern Love, because that was just for the video. Right. So that gives us six. Yeah. Okay, great.
Yes. Okay, easy enough to do. Tommy, what do you think? What do you got for this one?
I really love this playlist. As I said, I had not heard a lot of these songs. I'd mostly only heard the hits. So I really love the Abandoned Luncheonette songs specifically. But I really liked all of them. The only, I would say, I'm going to go 5.25 out of 6. I'm going to go very, very high. I really, really enjoyed it. And She's Gone is an all-timer. I really loved Camellia, which I'd never heard. All those songs, yeah. The only 0.75 I'm taking off is for some reason, the no part of Gino the Manager just doesn't sit right with my ears. So that's the only thing I'm taking off.
That is wild that you said 5.25. That is exactly the number that was in my head.
Oh, look at that.
I don't know what it was, but I was like, 5.25 feels right. And for a bunch of songs from a band that I really loved that I had never heard before, a lot of these songs, I liked them all. yeah, I think 5.25 is a great score, and I am going to go with it. I liked all the songs. You know, it's hard to listen to a Hall & Oates playlist and not hear the ones that you're like, but I'm happy you gave us the ones you did, and not just to hear all the songs that were on the, that all charted. This was right, a perfect yeah. playlist. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. But, David, you get to rate the playlist out of 6 as well. What do you think?
Oh my God. You know what? I hate causing controversy. I'll give it a 5.25. I mean, it's not perfect, you know, like it's not the, you're right. Now that I think about it, the G, no. It's like they were anticipating Rihanna's Ella.
Yep.
And it's not quite as incredible as when she does it. Yeah, they're just like, my argument is not that they are in the truly top tier of bands. My argument is that they are a lot better than many people think they are.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Totally. Yes, that's perfect.
They're like a total 5.25 out of 6 musical act. You know?
That's perfect. That is perfect. Exactly what this podcast is about. So you nailed right. it. Nobody is arguing that like Incubus is the best band of all time, but right. just that they're underrated.
Yeah, totally.
Weird that I picked episode 3 after we've done over 200. This was so fun, man. And I think this is the first time all three of us have given it the same score that's not 6. That's got to be
history. Yeah.
So we're making history today. And thanks so much for being on the show. Is there anything you'd like to promote on your way out of here, David?
My podcast, Election Profit Makers, that I host with my friends John and Starley, where we bet our own money on making political predictions. I'm losing a lot of money right now, but you can check out Election Profit Makers.
Hell yeah.
And then I co-created a cartoon that's on, you can find it on Hulu. It's called Dicktown.
Oh, I've heard about that. I'll definitely check it out. That's awesome.
Can you give us a little sneak? What's like a prediction you've bet on that from the show?
Well, I'm losing a lot of money on Cuomo leaving. I thought New York Governor Andrew Cuomo would be out of office by May 1st, and that obviously did not happen.
Yeah.
And I also bet that Andrew Yang would not win the New York City mayoral election, and I'm still losing money on that.
Well, I hope that you are right about that, but we'll see. Yeah.
This is a bodega. This is where you tip the guy $40 for a bag of gum. This is what it's like to be a New Yorker,
right?
Robot ass. All right. I will be at the DC Improv, I think, this very weekend.
Yeah, because we're putting this on next week.
So May 20th through the 22nd. So please come out to that. I'll be in the main room. Very exciting stuff. The DC Improv, May 20th through the 22nd. And I will be in Houston, Texas. I believe that date is June 19th and Lafayette, June 18th, Lafayette, Louisiana. I keep saying those backwards, but yeah, get out. If you live anywhere near those places, I'd love to see you. And Tommy, you got anything?
No, just get on the Patreon. It's great. Great talking to you guys.
Yep. $3 a month. Get you bonus episodes every week. Thanks again, David. This was so fun.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Hell yeah. All right. Keep it crispy, guys. Bye.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of 3 and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.